Thanks for tuning in to the Cleveland Public Library's website. This is November 19th, 2014, and our guest today is Maurice Claret. Happy birthday. Just a few days ago, you had a birthday. You're 31st.
Yeah, 31st.
31 years old here in 2014. Maybe the greatest high school running back I've ever seen in my life. Oh, Robert Smith was good. Let's not overlook Robert Smith. But I first met you. You don't remember this, of course. But in to your senior year at Warren Harding High School, was 2001, I believe,
yeah.
That season. And in the first round of the playoffs, you shredded the St. Ed defense, St. Edward High School defense, for over 300 yards, 200 yards in the first half. I've lost track of the number of touchdowns. But after the game, the St. Ed coach, John Gibbons, said, well, you know, if you take away his few long runs, we actually contained him pretty good. Those few long runs were 60, 70, 80 yards off for touchdowns. Anyway, do you remember that game?
Yeah, it was. We actually played at Kent State, uh-huh. And it was a cold day, and just early on, just kind of groove. You know, uh-huh. you seen a couple creases. You know, there's a lot of times at the initial onslaught of the game, uh-huh. we used to have a thing that's called "be the hammer, not the nail." Uh-huh. And so when the weather's cold, nobody wants to tackle. And if you can kind of try to impose your will early, it'll make the game easier as you go along. And so that was one thing I did. Those couple short runs that he was talking about where he stuffed me in at, I was imposing some sort of dominance on the defenders. Uh-huh. And then eventually, you know, the safety doesn't want to tackle you after that. And I just kind of got away and I broke some 60 and 70 yards early on. But it was a great day.
Yes, it was. Now, eventually we're going to get into your Ohio State career, the national championship mm-hmm. game against Miami, things of that nature. But let me dwell just for a couple more minutes on your transfer. You started at Austintown Fitch.
Yes.
And I remember asking you about that. And then you transferred to Warren Harding.
Yes.
And I asked you, why did you do that? And you, now let me tell the story you told then.
Okay.
Stories change over the years.
The truth.
Your story was that there you were at Austintown Fitch, sitting there in the locker room on like the day after National Signing Day, and kids are reading the paper, you're reading the paper, the Vindicator or whatever it was, and here were the stories of kids from Warren Harding going to Michigan and Ohio State, and you're reading about your teammates at Austintown Fitch, and they were going to like little Division III schools, and you said that you thought, you realized that if I wanted to go big time, I had to go to Warren Harding, not Austintown Fitch.
Yes, I shared that earlier today.
You did?
I don't remember that vivid story, but I shared the exact same words today.
You
I
did.
Remember, I just remember the essence of how I felt. And the essence was that these guys over at Michigan, I mean, these guys over at Warren Harding were going to, well, they had Carl Dix went to Michigan and Derek Toews went to Penn State. And they had Division I caliber schools, the elite Division I schools coming to look at them. And for me as a young kid, whenever you get involved in football, you realize you have some sort of talent, you want to be able to express it or show it at the highest level possible. And this was that avenue. There was no other avenue that I knew of in the area where you can go somewhere and basically play and to have Division I schools look at you. So at that moment, Warren Harding was like the golden goose. You know, you didn't have your websites where you have the exposure for high school talent where you can show yourself, and you didn't have the social media and all these other tools that you have to be exposed. So I just felt at that time, with me taking football serious as I did, I had to put myself in front of these people in order to be seen the way I wanted to be seen.
Now, back in those days, this year, Warren Harding just happens to be down a little bit.
Yeah.
But for most years, Warren Harding is one of the top programs in the state of Ohio.
Yes.
At one time, it was in the glory days of the All-American Conference. There was this conference with Maslin, Kent McKinley, Warren Harding, Niles McKinley, Steubenville, and Alliance. This was the most premier conference for many years in the state of Ohio. All those schools played at 10, 12,000 seat stadiums. And when the games were on, the town would shut down. Everybody was a burglar's delight, I always said. Everybody was at the game. So anyway, but Warren starting is, some of them, towns have changed now over the years. You see what has happened to so many of them. Canton is smaller. Maslin is certainly smaller.
Yeah.
Alliance, gee, they're off the website for as far as high school football goes, yes. You know, and Steubenville, that's a smaller town now. But anyway, back in the day, this was like the pros of high school football.
Yeah, I mean, High school football in general. I'm glad I was able to be a part of the glory year, so to speak.
Yeah.
When you talk about high school football and having 15 and 20,000 people come to the stadium,
yes.
And I just remember legendary names. I don't know if you remember Ted Bell. I remember coming up, and he was like the premier running back from the Youngstown area,
uh-huh.
And he ended up going to Michigan State, I believe. Uh-huh. He came from Cardinal Moore, and he went to Michigan State, but. And, you know, it was a feeling you got. It was like an old, I don't know why I said it this way, but it's like an old, old blue-collar feeling when you talk about Ohio high school football.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember just, you know, just people having a joy of how they talked about football and the feeling that you get from Northeastern Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy to say I lived in that moment, and I remember seeing people come to the games with their families and enjoy themselves and the entire city being shut down and I just remember that energy, you know, when people talk about, like when you talk about Browns football when you're a kid, you know, I remember that, you know, I can remember how that felt, that nostalgic feeling, and, you know, it was just special. Like, you know, I don't know if there's many other things that piques kids' interest these days where they don't want to do it, or if basketball is more fascinating because you have LeBron who's come from Ohio and more kids think that they can make it due to that. But, you know, I don't know. I'm happy to be a part of that moment or that era.
Yes. Okay. Then you go to Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
And what a freshman year you had. By the way, did you enroll at Ohio State for the spring semester before you were in?
The first guy to ever do it.
Oh, you were?
Yeah. The funny story behind it, Urban Meyer was the offensive line coach at Notre Dame at the time.
Uh-huh.
And I went to a Notre Dame game, and Julius Jones was playing at the time and Arnaz Battle.
Yeah.
And he said, hey, we have these elusive backs, but we don't have somebody to kind of run and pound the ball. And he said, with me being an O-line coach, you can come and play. And I said, man, well, I'm ready to graduate this year. I want to graduate and be done with high school
and
football.
And that was in the middle of your senior year?
No, this is the middle of my junior year.
Oh.
I wanted to forego the entire senior year.
You did?
And come to find out, I didn't have an English credit. So I went to summer school, and he said, basically, you can graduate in January.
Mm-hmm.
But what intersected it was that Urban Meyer and Bob Davey got fired.
Mm-hmm.
He called me from Bowling Green and said, I got a job at Bowling Green, but I know you're not coming here. And after that had happened, Coach Trussell, this all happened around the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Coach Trussell ended up going to Ohio State, and Tom McDaniels was my high school coach.
Mm-hmm.
And I went over to Tom, and I said, hey, Tom, can you get Coach Trussell on the phone?
Mm-hmm.
This was just, I walked out the weight room. I said, hey, I want to go to Ohio State. There was no recruiting process. I never got a scholarship offered to me. And so I went down and called Coach Trussell. I said, hey, Trussell, what's going on? And I said, this is Maurice Claret. And I said, I'm coming to Ohio State. And he was like, well, we didn't offer you a scholarship. And I said, you know, after the season, you will.
Uh-huh.
And I just like kind of laughed and joked it off. But he was like, all right, if you want to come, you can come. And I basically recruited myself to Ohio State.
Really?
Yeah, because John Cooper never offered me a scholarship.
Uh-huh. So that's right. Cooper was your coach at Ohio State.
Trussell was my coach. But Cooper had fired my senior year. I'm going into my senior year, so he never offered me a scholarship prior to that.
And so you go down there. You were in that spring of what would have been your senior year.
Yes.
You were at Ohio State.
Yes.
In the weight room already. Part of the program. Were you part of the program already?
Yeah, I was part of the program. I was able to do spring ball. I was able to enroll in classes. I was able to. I was so able to get through the confusion that most guys get through when they get there in the fall. You kind of get there in the fall and trying to figure everything out. But from January into June, I was able to kind of adjust, and then I had a summer there. So by the time fall camp had rolled around, I felt like I was a part of the team.
Yes. But now you were the second string at your position.
Fourth.
Fourth string.
I was fourth string prior to 2 weeks before the season.
Really?
And the first starting running back, he kept fumbling the ball at practice. The second string guy, he had twisted his ankle. And the third string guy, which was a guy from California, he just didn't break a lot of tackles. He wasn't as developed at the time. And it was one practice. Coach Trussell said, hey, we're about to have a scrimmage. He said, you can get your opportunity. And this was the first time throughout my entire offseason that I had a time to go with the ones.
Uh-huh.
And so I go out there and I break a couple runs and break a few tackles. And he said, hey, let's do this again tomorrow. Let me see you get your reps with these guys. So I had been so prepared. You know, there wasn't any like intimidation or anything that accompanied me, but you know, I was just prepared for it, and I eventually went out there and won the starting position 2 weeks before the season.
And in that first game, you ran for over 100 yards.
Yeah, 175.
175 yards.
Yes.
How many touchdowns do you have?
Three touchdowns.
The opening game.
Opening game.
And that was, you were off and running.
Yeah, the whole life had changed. I went from Maurice Claret, the Warren Harding guy who came here early, to, you know, the premier running back at Ohio State.
And you became the Big Ten's freshman of the year.
Yes.
For that season, your freshman year, you rushed for 1,237 yards, 18 touchdowns, and Ohio State went 14-0. So now let's go to January 3rd of your freshman year, the national championship game against Miami. I forget who was favored in that game. The game was played in
Arizona.
Okay. And it goes to overtime. Would you take me through the... Wasn't it the end of the game when you forced an overtime or made a big defensive play, or was that in the overtime?
No, that wasn't over. It was right before overtime. It was right end of the third quarter, beginning of the fourth, somewhere around there. Well, we're in the huddle, and Craig Krenzel, who's the quarterback at the time, and Ben Hartsock, they were roommates, or real good friends.
Yeah.
And in the huddle, we were like on a 6-yard line. Ben says, "Hey, Craig, can you give me a touchdown in the national championship?" And so I was like, all right, cool, just get in the touchdown. We're on the 6-yard line. Can we get this thing going? Well, anyways, Craig tries to force the ball. Sean Taylor, who passed away, played with the Redskins, he intercepted the ball. He takes the ball, runs down the sideline, and I had took an angle on him, and I seen he was carrying the ball very recklessly. And I eventually just wedged my hand in there and took the ball back.
You had to catch him and then knock the ball loose.
Yeah, no, you had to just catch it, and I kind of stripped him and then fell to the ground. And eventually it led to us kicking a field goal, but that essentially allowed us to go to overtime.
Okay. And then you scored the winning touchdown in overtime.
Yeah.
Was there another big play that you were involved in that led to that winning touchdown?
No, outside of me stripping the ball from Sean Taylor and scored two times in those two touchdowns, it was a hard-fought game. The irony is that you had Willis McGahee on one side and Maurice Claret on the other side, and you had Craig Krenzel be the leading rusher. He was the leading rusher of the game. And so that was the irony of it all. But, you know, it was a good time. It was for a kid to play 13 games in high school and win the every award you could possibly win individually.
Yes.
And to go to Ohio State and to have that experience of being on campus for the first time.
Yes.
And to be thrust into the spotlight, and you're starting for football, and you go through one in your first season, you win all your games. There's nothing for a football player at that moment that can compare to that, you know what I'm saying? So to experience that, and that entire journey is just like, it was an original experience, you know what I mean? Like, it's something you can't pay for, something you can't buy. It was just the effects of your hard work throughout this entire process being shown and experiencing that, you know, it was a fun deal.
You were king of the hill. Life was good.
Life's good, yeah.
And what happened after that?
I had a bunch of success athletically, but I had no clue as the character or what it took characteristically to uphold this success. So I leave Ohio. So I leave my hometown. Right. So the attitude, the mentality, and the character I had in my hometown, it worked for my hometown. But the social dynamics in Youngstown, Ohio, are very different than they are in Columbus, Ohio. So eventually I get down to Columbus, and as I'm having success on the field, I'm still continuing to have like the Youngstown attitude and the Youngstown mentality off the field. And TV doesn't show that, you know, so nobody sees that because it's not their business to promote the social ails or the social complex situations that guys can't handle, you know what I mean? In this day and age, you can't because you have social media, but back then it was hard to get to know a person. And so what eventually happened was that, you know, I started to enjoy myself inside the nightclubs, and I had 20 or 30 guys around me always wanting to be out and about and doing everything I shouldn't have been doing. So that thing progressed just as my football talent progressed, this animal off the field progressed. And before you know it, I've won the national championship. At that time, if you can take your mind back, you had LeBron playing high school basketball. Yes. And if you can remember that moment of how big that was, just in Northeastern Ohio, and I was coming up here and I seen all the fame he had, I seen all the fame I personally had, and just the totality of that, not understanding how to manage that or managing myself inside that moment, eventually it just led to so many just red flags. Now Ohio State's scared because I have too much going on off the field, and now I have 20 and 30 guys around me all the time, and now I'm unenrolling in the classes I'm supposed to be in. I'm taking the easier classes I can take just to stay eligible, and I basically lost focus. So eventually it was like the seed got planted of irresponsible behavior. Once I started to have success on the field, and then these things just began to just build and grow and have a mind of their own, so to speak.
Well, you were spending a lot of money. Where did it come from?
Just me being out and about, meeting people myself, you know what I'm saying, and people understanding you're in college, and people just say, hey, you know, do you need something, and things of that nature, you know what I mean? So it was me putting myself in these situations, guys who just loved Ohio State football. Uh-huh. You know, we would become friends, we would have fun and enjoy ourselves.
You were quoted as saying back then, or shortly after that, in an article about your life when you were putting everything in perspective, that you were living an NFL lifestyle in college.
Yes, exactly.
That you had more money. Later on, it was when you were playing for Omaha in the Nighthawks, that you were making more at Ohio State than you did playing pro ball for Omaha.
The quality of life, and this is Ohio State didn't have anything to do with this. This was just me and the amount of support that you have from people. You know, you have to imagine, right? Imagine if Brian Hoyer went out here and won the championship. Brian Hoyer would be a celebrity around his town. Brian Hoyer would be a king around his town because we've not had or felt it for so long. You know, if he did that, it would be a big deal. So if you can put the same context in Columbus, Ohio, Maurice Claret was the instrumental part of us winning a national championship. When you think about economics, when you think about so many other things that I had assisted around that time, and I was young, and we had the opportunity to do it again. It was a big moment. You know, I didn't get it then, but now being a little older and seeing it was just a big moment. And I'm not sure anybody could be responsible enough to handle this. You know what I'm saying? Nobody knows how to handle success. There's no blueprint. There's no blueprint to say, hey, because when you become successful and you walk outside every day, there's so many different circumstances that come up and so many different ideas, and everything sounds good and everything feels good, and you're not prepared just because you don't have the life experience. And I don't care who you are. I don't care if it's myself, Jameis Winston, LeBron James, Tim Tebow, whoever. It's hard to just manage these different – it's hard to manage these experiences when your experiences coming up in a neighborhood are so limited. You know, when you're coming up, you go to school, you play football, you go home, you hang out in your neighborhood. There's nothing else socially that you do to help to develop anything inside of you. You know what I'm saying? The most the biggest dynamic experiences that you get are when you happen to go to football practice and you have a coach from a different dynamic and he lets you into his world, or he may take you somewhere, but it's all sports related, nothing socially. You know what I'm saying? Nothing socially or personally do you develop as a young kid before you get onto these campuses. And then if you're good, you're jolted into a spotlight, you know what I'm saying? And then, you know, everything becomes magnified. You know what I mean? Be it good or bad, everything is magnified. So, you know, it's a complex situation.
You said at one time that when you're going through all your troubles, that a high school coach took you under his wing and helped you. Who was that coach and what did he do?
Initially, in two different situations. My first situation, when I was coming from junior high to high school, his name was Roland Smith. Roland Smith, I was incarcerated three times when I was a juvenile. Yeah, and Roland Smith was a correctional officer, but also a strength and conditioning coach. Mm-hmm. And so he said, basically, you need some positive structure in your life. Mm-hmm. You know, you play football, you're very good, but you have no structure when you're away from football. So he was the first one to introduce me to weightlifting and introduce me to conditioning with the team and introduce me to that whole junior high kid transitioned high school, and that eventually put me on a path to where I ended up at, you know what I'm saying? But also I had another guy by the name of Coach Matt Richardson when I was in high school.
Matt Richards?
Yeah, Matt Richardson.
Oh, Matt Richardson.
Yeah, Matt Richardson. He played for Youngstown State, played for Coach Trussell, but he was sort of the mentor throughout everything. You know, there was a natural connection because he was a running back, I was a running back, but it was just we had come from the same dynamic. He understood what it was that was not bothering me, but I couldn't figure out. A lot of young guys just can't figure life out. And he was basically a mentor throughout my process throughout high school.
It's been well documented. You wound up going to prison for what, a couple of years, three years?
3 years and 11 months.
Almost 4 years.
Yeah, 4 years basically.
Wow. What was that like? And how did the other inmates treat you? You were the big star.
It was very humbling and rewarding at the same time because it was the first time in Maurice Clarett's life that I had a time to work on me as an individual. You put it in this context, when you're playing ball and you're trying to prepare to become a better ball player, that's what basically becomes your life. You become a better individual who's just basically trying to get better at football. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't matter if you play basketball or other areas like that, but you never get a chance to work on the individual person. There's not any circumstances where the person is caused to come out. You know, everybody when they want to meet you in that phase, like when people want to meet LeBron, they want to meet him in the LeBron basketball player sense, not the LeBron individual person sense, because nobody knows that. They don't even know he is a basketball player. As me as a football player, I've only developed my skill to become a better football player. I never had to work on the individual and expressing that and showing that and things of that nature. So when I finally get to prison and everything was away from me, football and the partying and the nightclubs and the women and everything like that, you're left with the individual. And so you have to figure out who are you. You know what I'm saying? For so long, you've been doing everything. You've been trying to become a better professional. You've been trying to become all these things, but you've never just become a better individual. You know, who are you? What do you stand for? What do you want out of life? What do you want to do with yourself? You know, and up until that point, I've never thought of it. You know what I'm saying? So the first 7 months of my incarceration, I was locked down 23 hours out of the day. So in a cell.
You were?
Yeah, so 23 hours out of the day, you're locked down and isolated. And from that standpoint, you just start to figure out, you know, you have nothing but your thoughts, you know. You're in that situation, you have nothing but your mind, your creativity, and just the things you think about, you know. And from that moment, you start just separating stuff.
Wow. That, of course, for those who are listening on the website, he went to prison for, I believe it was armed robbery.
Yes.
And prior to that, now you, by the time you're behind bars, you know your football career is over.
Yes.
But you did have a chance. You actually sued the NFL. Ohio State dismissed you for, I don't know what their reason was. They were just real curious about where your money was coming from.
It's never been explained. It was been explained a little bit on TV. So I had a cell phone that was paid for by a booster in high school.
Okay. Back in Warren?
When I was in high school.
Yeah.
And so the NCAA, as crazy as it sounds, they gave me a violation for every month I had the phone.
Wow.
So even though I had one phone that I got paid, every month that the guy paid a bill, it was a penalty. And you had a mandatory discipline that had to take place based upon everything. I also got a $25 check from a birthday party.
Mm-hmm.
They suspended me for taking a $25 check from a birthday party. And there was a bunch of maybe three miscellaneous things. So there was nothing ever. I didn't have a situation where I took $10,000 and $20,000 and $15,000. I would get free clothes or a discount on shoes or things like that. Yeah. But nothing ever like, hey, your mother is going to live an illustrious life, and here's a check for it. That was never a reason why I got suspended, and that's all can be researched and proven.
Okay. So then you wanted to play pro ball. You didn't have many other options at that time.
No.
So you sued the NFL.
Yes.
At that time, a rule that you couldn't play pro ball in the NFL until 3 years you were out of high school.
Yes.
And so you sued them. Eventually, you lost the lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
However, then Denver drafted you.
Yes.
The Denver Broncos drafted you in the third round
2005.
2005, yes, third round.
Yes.
But you were out of shape by then, weren't you?
Yeah, so the time, so I was suspended from Ohio State in 2003. Yeah. I was suspended from Ohio State in 2003, and I was suspended indefinitely. Mm-hmm. So there was never a, hey, when do you come back to school type of deal. So I tried to come back that next year, and when I tried to come back, I had basically went through all of the get your grade point average up and all the rigor that they had me to go through. Excuse me. And so when I tried to come back again for the second year, my third year, third year, they said, hey, Maurice, for the next 3 months, the next 3 or 4 months, you have to do 6 a.m. punishment runs. So you've got your 3.0, you've got your grades together, you've got your attendance together, you've done everything, you've been compliant, right? You've been pushed away from the football facility, you haven't been around for the last 3 or 4 months, and now I was living 20 minutes away from campus. You have to come in at 6 in the morning every morning to do your punishment runs, and on top of that, and you have to go through psychiatric treatment because you were lying to the NCAA. So at that point, I said, I don't want anything to do with this. I felt like it was just over abuse. And then from that standpoint, I couldn't go to another college because I would have to sit out again. Uh-huh. And from that, I said, hey, I'll just go to the NFL. I never wanted to say, hey, NFL, let me in. I want to do what I want to. I just didn't want to. But in the meantime, I had 2 years away from football. So the 2 years away from football, there was never like a, hey, I have a game coming next fall. I have a game coming this Sunday. I have a date set in mind. I never knew when I was going to play again. So just the stress, the depression, the not knowing, the bad habits you pick up from just hanging out and going to nightclubs and doing everything to kind of put a Band-Aid on this moment of my life. I put so many bad habits in place. So when Denver decided to draft me, Denver thought that they were getting Maurice Claret of 2002 and 2003. They eventually got me, and I was even reluctant to go because I knew deep down in my mind, deep down in my soul, I wasn't ready to play. And as a result, you know, just the behavior ensued.
So they let you go before the end of training camp?
Yes.
And then what did you do? When did you wound up in you went to prison.
Prison, yes.
And then after that, you wind up 2010 with the Omaha Nighthawks.
Yeah, so I got out of
school. One more shot.
Yeah, I got out of school. I had no interest or intention of playing football anymore.
Really?
I knew what I was going to do. I had a plan on how to get myself back in society, how to make myself some money. So for maybe about the last 18 months of prison, I was very sharp on what it was that I was going to do and honing in on it. So I got out. My first mission was to go out there and finish school. Went to Ohio State, aced my coursework there. After that, in the meantime, I get a call from Coach Trussell. He said, hey, Maurice, there's a team in Omaha, Nebraska. It's a UFL team, and they would like you to play football. So I was like, all right, cool. I'll go out there and try out. I went out there, tried out, and basically it was a bunch of people on the backside of their NFL career, and there was a bunch of young guys who were coming in and trying to develop a good concept, just a lot of overhead at first. So eventually they came over and they came and brought me over. I went out there, performed out there for a couple seasons. Had a lot of fun doing it, and just basically it was a great transition back into life because there's so much isolation in Omaha, Nebraska, that it gave me the chance to work on some of the things that I wanted to do.
How about the coach there? Did he have a positive influence on you?
Yeah, he was phenomenal. Joe Mowgli, he was actually the ex-CEO of TD Ameritrade.
That's right.
And he's down at Coastal Carolina right now. But he was a phenomenal guy. The first year we had Jack Kaczynski. He came from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in Boston College. He had Coach Matt Ryan the first year. And then you had Coach Joe Mowglia. But Mowglia was more teaching about life principles, and it really interested me because that's all I had learned about in prison. And the next thing I know, he had came in, and we began to talk and create a relationship with one another. And he actually helped to be instrumental in one of the coolest moments of my life. So one day we go to the golf course, and he said, hey, Maurice, found out you're interested in finances and business and things of that nature. And he said, just tell me your life story. I told him my life story, told him what it was that I read and what I studied when I was in prison about finances and things of that nature. And I told him how fascinated I was with Warren Buffett. And he's like, Warren's one of my good friends. And I was like, are you serious? And he was like, yes. And so I didn't believe it. He was like, I'm going to see if he can meet you. So I thought it was like a far-fetched idea. And next thing I know, I'm walking through my apartment on a Wednesday, and Warren Buffett calls me. And he was like, hey, Maurice, would you mind coming in on Saturday? Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right, cool, I'll come in. And, I brought my family in. But it was very interesting to sit right across from him like this. and, you know, to have 5 hours of just one-on-one conversation and dialogue and any question that I wanted to ask, and, you know, just to sit there and be able to do that was one of the coolest experiences from Joe Moglia. And that was like, no, that was a cool moment in my personal history.
Wow. And so your life is changing by then.
Yeah, my life is changing. I have a, at that moment, I started coaching. So my original plan when I got out of prison, I said, hey, you have a bunch of football camps that they teach kids how to run around cones, but essentially that's basically working on a bunch of motor skills, but they don't have something to actually teach kids mm-hmm. the game. Teach concepts, teach stanzas, adjustments, and the whole totality of football, you know, philosophies and why you do what you're doing. And so basically I just kind of laid out a plan in prison of how I plan on teaching different things. So first thing I did was I say, okay, if you want to get the kids, you have to get the coaches. I went out there and I basically have 20 coaches who used to come in on the weekends. I would teach them different benchmarks, what you should have for kids. I would teach them everything on basically how do kids approach the game, how they warm up, just different tendencies, different techniques that you're supposed to teach the kids, and basically had a presence with them. That eventually put me on to maybe having about 20 kids at first, 20 growing to 50, 50 growing to 75, and eventually within probably a 18 month period, I had 400 kids, an entire league of kids that I was basically training year round, be it with football, working with linemen, and I had six or seven employees and a bunch of maybe four. I had four guys who were from the local college getting college credits for helping me out. So basically, I had a full-fledged business within about 18 months of me being out of my incarceration.
And that's what you're doing now?
No, that was when I was in Omaha. Oh. So in 2012, the league had shut down.
Okay.
And I was only in Omaha, Nebraska for the purpose of playing football.
Mm-hmm.
So me being on probation, they forced me to come back to Ohio, and I had to shut everything down.
Mm-hmm.
I shut everything down, and in the meantime, this whole, it was like an intersection. ESPN had been reaching out to me to do a documentary 30 for 30.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they were reaching out, I was like, okay, well, I wasn't known for football in Omaha, not as big as I am in Ohio, so I'll come back to Ohio with the same concept and do the same thing. So I came back to Ohio, and in the meantime, I started shooting the film. So the film's taking off, and also at the same time as I'm trying to put the football component together here in Ohio, I had a woman from Quinnipiac University, a lady by the name of Marilyn Ford. She was the head law professor for the law department, and she had said,
and that's at what university?
Quinnipiac in Connecticut.
Oh.
Yeah, so she said, we're doing a study on your life with the class.
Mm-hmm.
Could you come in and could you, you know, share your story with us? So I went out there, I did that, and from that moment, she had contacted or put me in contact with somebody from Wisconsin, and then I had people locally in Ohio saying, hey, what are you doing? And we briefly seen pieces of your story on TV.
Mm-hmm.
Can you kind of come in and tell your story? And so before I knew it, between shooting the film and between just a word of mouth spreading, mm-hmm. I was basically in probably about six or seven cities a month. And then after the film that came out, it probably grew to maybe 10 or 12 or 13. But also in the meantime, I was able to start the Comeback Project, which is a nonprofit group back home. Back in Youngstown, you know, and it was all with the intention of, hey, I have fun and I enjoy teaching kids football, but I found out through the process of that, you're teaching more life skills than football skills in the process. So I went back home with a guy by the name of Pastor Nate Ortiz. He runs a youth facility back there, and I basically gave him a bunch of ideas of stuff that I seen work and stuff that I would like to see happen. And eventually we have monthly events tutoring kids in math, science, and English. And basically on Saturday we opened up our own full-fledged facility. Prior to this we were renting from the church, but we'll open up our own facility and have this whole thing going on year-round. Also after that I ended up getting into the brokering of pallets and packaging. Basically from being an entrepreneur, I knew a man who had a paletting company, and seeing different opportunities I may be able to leverage myself, and I started brokering different paletting and packaging opportunities, and from that standpoint just been living life. You know, I get married next summer, I have a fiance, we've been together for 9 years. She stuck with me through the entire
time. That's Ashley.
Ashley.
Okay.
Yes, and I have an 8-year-old daughter. You know, I coach her 4th grade basketball team.
Yeah.
I'll be happy. I'll be down there. I'll leave here and
yeah.
go. And I coach tonight, uh-huh. and that's another challenge with little girls.
Yeah.
But
and what's her name, by the way?
Jaden.
Jaden, J-A-D-E-N.
J-A-Y-D.
Uh-huh.
Yes, so I coach the 4th grade basketball team.
Mm-hmm.
She's in tutoring sessions twice a week. Take her there, get her up in the morning and get her together and make lunches and all that stuff. But
okay.
That's my life, you know, just get it together, figuring it out and just moving forward.
Okay. As we wind this up, would you reflect back what What are your thoughts about Tom McDaniels, your high school coach?
Oh, phenomenal. If it hadn't been for Tom McDaniels, I wouldn't have had a fraction of the success I have in my life. He set me down. I remember he gave me a Joe Paterno book, and he was like, the book was more just talking about football in general, but also talking about players not understanding the game of football. You know, so there's a lot of athletes, there's a lot of talent, but not many understand the game and the philosophies of football. So Tom McDaniels had told me, he said, Maurice, you know, if you ever want to be as good as you want to be, you have to understand the game and why people do what they do. So he would sit me down at different quarterback meetings and just work with me and talk with me through the game. And then from my sophomore to my junior year, I probably went from if I would have a chart on a scale of confidence and the ability to play and understanding why I use my certain skill set and understand where I fit in the big scheme of things, I probably went from a 4 to probably a 9. You know, just in the matter of just him sitting, working with me, and just really breaking the game down to me, and more than that, man, the man taught me discipline. You know, he was a strict disciplinarian, and there's no secret why his son has the success he has in New England. You know what I'm saying? He was raised that way.
His son, the assistant coach.
Yeah, Josh McDaniels. Yes. He's he's the offensive coordinator over at New England.
Yes.
And but phenomenal guy, phenomenal football mind, and even to this day, you know, essentially it's why I made the money I made in Omaha from the information he taught me. Like, I'm teaching these kids things I've learned when I was 17.
Really? And how about Jim Tressel? Your reflections on Jim?
Yeah, Jim is I think our relationship runs deeper probably than most people in my life. You know, it's been a roller coaster with him. One, just our own personal relationship and how we became close and created a moment in history for a while. You know, a moment in history we were able to do together, and it was cool. Both being out of Youngstown, but the life lessons that man has taught me and taught everybody and everybody comes in contact, man, it's phenomenal to be associated with him in many capacities. But I actually learned more from him through watching him go through so much adversity. I've never seen somebody go through that much turmoil publicly and end up in a bigger and better situation on the backside of it. But to have so much humility and so much character throughout that process, when he could have behaved differently, you know what I'm saying? But I learned more from him as an individual lately in life than anything going on in my life. You know what I mean? There's a lot of people who I know would have reacted totally different being in that situation, being in that stature. But man, you know, his name, his character, and respect he has as an individual for me, they're far above anybody that I know that I personally know.
How about the athletic director at that time at Ohio State? You had bad feelings for him at one time, that incident about you wanted to fly home for a friend's funeral and it never happened, and you were very bitter about that. Are you over that?
In context, you have to take in context. I was 18, and emotionally, not really understanding. Yeah. Politically, I didn't understand at the moment at Ohio State, as the business didn't want to be associated with that, so I was mad and angry. When you grow and you understand, you forgive people. I'm pretty sure inside of that moment, he probably wishes he would have done something different, because I'm pretty sure his emotions may have got the best of him at certain moments. And then to be responsible for myself, I put myself in situations like that for me to be up under investigation. You know what I'm saying? So when both people look back at the moment, I'm pretty sure if he came through the door right now, we probably wouldn't laugh, but I would probably get a chuckle off, like, hey, you know, it happened. You know, so I don't have any hard feelings towards this individual, because, you know, I did stuff wrong, he did stuff wrong. It's like the relationship with a man and a woman. You know, things happen.
You seem to be in a good mental state right
now.
Yeah,
absolutely.
No grudges against anybody?
No, not at all.
Well, it's a pleasure to see you after all these years.
Pleasure to be
Maurice
here.
Claret, thanks for appearing on Cleveland Public Library's website.
Thank you.
Continued good luck to you.
Thank you.
Best to your family, your wife Ashley, the daughter Jaden. Maurice Claret, everybody.